So that's something I've been trying to call attention to lately, is just help people think about, how many customers do I have compared to like the rate in which I'm going to lose them, and then understand how fast I need to acquire customers to get a really healthy benchmark of like, how much do I need to charge? How predictable is my income really? Am I doing enough for sales? There's just a lot of things that go into that, well beyond just like, I've got a cool splashy landing page and a Stripe buy now button, and I'm going to tell people like, I don't do fucking calls, go into Trello. That's not how you build a business.
What's it like launching 5 companies in 5 months, hitting 7 figures in revenue, and feeling like you're just getting started? Today, I talk to the man, Hunter Hammonds, as he prepares to launch Landed and Orchestra, make updates to the wildly successful Hey Friends and Off Menu, and continue his impressive series of successes over the last year. We talk about the lessons that he's learned along the way, and the how and the why behind what comes next. Hunter's a fascinating guy, and I can't wait for you to hear the conversation. I'm Brian Athey, and this is The Creative Brief. Bro, I am so excited for this conversation. You are one of the most fascinating people that I follow.
I'm excited to be here, man. I love what you've been doing with this podcast. And ever since you had my good buddy Mark Kimian on here, I was like, Brian's approaching this the right way. So
how cool is Mark?
Mark's the fucking man. He sends me stuff sometimes and I'm like, how are you this creative? Like what he's painting or like whatever. And it's just like, man, like you're on a different level. I love the journey that guy's on.
Me too. And that he would share it all. He was an open book, and I got such great response on that conversation because he dove into like the real talks, you know, like it.
Yeah.
Once we got past sort of the formalities, we were deep into philosophy and God and psychedelics and all the stuff. So
he's a wild man. He's got to be in the, I don't know, at least for people that are like active on social, Marks has one of the most interesting and storied careers in tech and design. So he's a wealth of information.
That's right. Well, if you don't mind, man, give me like, so I know you, like I said, through your Twitter account, you know, the last few maybe months or so on your account has piqued a lot of my curiosity, but you've been in the agency game for a long time. Tell me a little bit about before you launched Assembly, kind of what got you to that point. Catch me up.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a recovering designer is the way I like to call it. You know, I attend my Designers Anonymous meetings. My career started off as, you know, as a designer and an entrepreneur. And I always thought design was a conduit, is an opportunity for me to do business. All my ideas, obviously, in tech are like, you have to have an interface, right? So started that way and you know, did some interesting stuff with some startups, sold a couple of companies. For some reason, talked myself into thinking that starting an agency was a good idea. It was an interesting journey for sure. We built a pretty sizable agency doing a little north of $12 million a year, but just hated it. It grew to something that I didn't love. It was a lot of, you know, kind of digital innovation, embedded consulting with, you know, enterprise level partners. And it became a game that I didn't want to play.
Was the scale kind of leading the way? Like, you know, the clients that were coming to you were kind of like shaping what you were building, or did you have a lot of intention?
That's certainly a part of it. Yeah. I mean, especially when you work with an organization that large, they have expectations, or better yet, they have layers of internal politics and management that you also have to have internal layers to be able to navigate. So it's very different than like a creative design agency. Right. I'm not the suit and tie guy to just say yes to everything. Like it's not how I roll, and just realized it wasn't a fit. Ended up taking like a 6-month sabbatical and saying like, okay, what's next? And then, my good buddy Sahil and I decided to, start this thing called Assembly. And that's what we've been doing for, I guess, 9-10 months now. I think that's 9 months.
Well, that's a good segue into tweet number one, which is, this is back from November 1st and says, we launched 5 productized services in 5 months. Today, we're at mid 7 figures in annual recurring revenue and growing quickly. We've invested 0 and raised 0. We've been profitable from day 1. I know, I think the ambition at one point was like a service a month or like a new company every month, but you guys took a very unique approach to how you guys were building these things.
Yeah, thank you, man. 12 and 12 months is what we said, and we're maybe sort of kind of sticking to that. That was the kind of target that we set out there. I'm a big believer that you should just have some audacious fucking goal to go after. So that was the one we set.
12 months is insane.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. We'll probably end up somewhere around like 9 or 10.
You guys have productized very specialized services, and you figured out a way to do it with the help of, or really in partnership with creators, which is I think a super fascinating approach. What led you to that realization that instead of kind of going a traditional route, there was a new way to pursue?
Yeah, I like to think of the story of Sisyphus, right? Like doomed to push that boulder up the hill for all eternity, only for it to fall back down.
Yep.
And I think that the vast majority of creatives that try and go into business, like let's be honest, and I say this as a designer, I don't think designers necessarily make great business people most of the time. Sure, there are some exceptions, but there's often that like oil and water mix of like the need to be a capitalist, but also like, you know, the liberal art school kid that's like, I just want like pure aesthetics, right? So for us, you know, one of the things that we wanted to solve from the upfront is just how the fuck do we get customers, right? Mm-hmm. And distribution is everything. And so for us, going the creator route allowed us to instantly tap into authority, trust, and audience, right? So instead of us having to slowly over time build the authority or trust of this brand, slowly try and get attention and eyeballs and audience, we could just tap into all of that from day one. Obviously, there's some heavy, heavy, heavy trade-offs there. The stakes are much higher from the onset when you start there, because ultimately, you're kind of now at this point the steward of someone's reputation in a very small way. So you have to be very mindful of that, which has been an interesting lesson for us and journey over the past, you know, 9-10 months. But yeah, that's why we went that route.
You know, there's this book called it's one of the EOS books. I think it's Traction. Maybe Rocket Fuel.
Traction and Rocket Fuel. Yeah.
Yeah. Rocket Fuel. And that talks about the visionary and integrator sort of duality of a good company. And do you guys see yourselves as sort of the operational integrational piece of what could be a potential company around a visionary? Like, do you guys approach these creators and say like, we love what you're doing and here's how you scale it? Or is it more of like a friendship or how do those relationships come about?
There's a lot of lessons in what we're doing that I think a lot of people could apply and see an increase in success, right? That's one of those that's just so special. Like, it's so network-based. You know, my co-founder, Sahil Bloom, there's a ton of network advantages that come in that. So for us, it's the case of going to friends that have an audience, and we think there's potential to squeeze more out of it. Case in point, like Ali Abdaal. He didn't have a YouTube agency. It makes all the sense in the world for Ollie to have a YouTube agency. Let's do that. In terms of like that EOS visionary integrator playbook, like that's still going to be internal with us. The creator is going to be kind of like the promotional partner. A lot of cases, we're going to use their playbook to build the initial version of the service. But, you know, we pretty much own and operate the businesses.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. I think I heard you say something one time about like, you know, you're not prime going out to get an influencer like Logan Paul and just put his face on it because he's got an audience. You're going to find somebody with an actual understanding and proficiency and ability to, it seems like, be more than a spokesperson. It seems like kind of drive the external perception of the company.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you have to. In services, it's a B2B market, right? Like, I think what you're referencing, I said, I don't know shit about selling chocolates, which is true, right? But, you know, if you're selling chocolates and you're Mr. Beast and you have this massive audience, you have all these kids, like, they don't need to know that you're Willy Wonka to like buy chocolate from you, right? They're like, Mr. Beast, chocolate, awesome, I'm in, right?
Yeah.
If it's a service, it's a totally different thing, right? Like, you have to have some basis of authority for people to say, yeah, that seems like the right place to buy that service from. So, you know, the easiest way to look at it is like, if it's some random YouTube agency and you're like, should I work with them? Like, you know, what's their expertise, et cetera. That's one thing. But when you look at it, and you say, oh, it's Ali Abdaal's and they're using his playbook for YouTube, all of his lessons, his learnings. That seems like there's going to be good authority there. So that's the route that we went.
Hey, it's Brian, reminding you to hit that subscribe button and check back in next week for a great conversation with fitness pro and influencer Christiana Purvis. Don't miss it. Okay, back to the episode. Right, the work is just impeccable. It's so great.
Thank you.
And you've got some incredible designers working there. It seems like you've got a full team built out there.
Well, it's an important thing to call out. Like across our portfolio, we're around 100 people. So it's a large organization. There's a lot of moving parts. Off-menus is smaller. It's a little bit more intimate, but there's a lot behind the scenes to make all this work.
I think if I've got it right, Hey Friends is kind of like you bring us the brand or the concept and we will essentially create the entirety of a YouTube channel. We'll help you with the content. We'll help you with the thumbnails. We'll help you with the editing and execution. And then Viral Cuts is more about short form content production. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, these things are always evolving. Hey Friends started off with that. Like let's build YouTube channels from scratch for companies and entrepreneurs and things like that. And we saw a lot of churn because people just can't keep up with the pace of needing to create YouTube content. So now Hey Friends is pretty discerning. It pretty much only works with established creators that are looking to grow faster on YouTube. So we think of that as like your high intrinsic value. So think of a Sahil, for example, who's already a prolific content creator. He's always putting something out there. He looks at YouTube and says, I'm going to record a video every day, right? Like that's someone that we can rely on to say, we can go on this journey with you because the strategy work that our team can do from, you know, competitor research, concepts, titles, thumbnails, you know, retention editing, A/B testing, et cetera, all that's going to apply because you're going to have the discipline to keep doing this, right? So the creator is like high intrinsic value. Hey Friends is high production value. Then Viral Cuts is now kind of a storefront, if you will, for our new company Landed. So Viral Cuts is a great place to get phenomenally talented video editors fully embedded into your team.
So this productized model, there was Design Pickle and there's Superside and there's some large companies that try and tackle these productized services and subscription models. But it's really been made famous. I just talked to Brett a couple of weeks ago. It's really been made famous by Design Joy and kind of the contrarian. He calls it, I almost say provocateur nature of the way that he talks about money and pricing and recurring revenue. But after talking to him, you know, I think that a lot of it depends. What I would say is it works really well for a single freelancer, kind of a one man shop.
Correct.
What you've tried to tackle is scale. And what I've watched, you know, as these companies evolve is that you've learned a lot of lessons about scale and churn and client expectations and management and pacing. There's a lot that you've uncovered in the process of actually turning these services into companies, viable companies. And I wonder like what some of those lessons are that you would want to highlight.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's a good one. You know, I mean, the first is that I said this when we first started, like we're doing this from a place of unfair advantage, right? Like I've already ran like an 8-figure agency. So I know the business really well at all levels. From, you know, like starting out as a scrappy like team trying to get any customer to like working with enterprise. I've seen that whole journey.
Yeah.
And then we have distribution in a lot of ways kind of solved for. So those are two advantages that we have. With those aside, there's still a wealth of things that you still have to learn as you take a new service to market. Okay. So we're able to go into, I think, some of these companies, some of these services with a healthy bank of assumptions about how this should work, and then a really well-measured set of metrics that we're trying to hit. And so we know that, like, for example, if churn is over X percent for off-menu, for example, that means we need LTV to be here to make it worthwhile for us, to make the sales process and the customer acquisition, to make that entire thing flow in a way that's, you know, somewhat predictable for us. So one of the big things that I've been trying to call attention to lately because I see people just utterly fuck this up, is the concept of MRR, right? And right. It's like, you don't actually have MRR. I know that you log in to Stripe, if that's your payment processor, I'm sure it is, and it's like MRR, and you're like, awesome, I've got MRR. If you actually look at that on a cohort basis and factor in for churn, you're going to find out really quickly that that's an incredibly volatile and unpredictable number. So that's something I've been trying to call attention to lately, is just help people think about, how many customers do I have compared to like the rate in which I'm going to lose them, and then understand how fast I need to acquire customers to get a really healthy benchmark of like, how much do I need to charge? How predictable is my income really? Am I doing enough for sales? There's just a lot of things that go into that, well beyond just like, I've got a cool splashy landing page and a Stripe buy now button, and I'm going to tell people like, I don't do fucking calls, go into Trello. That's not how you build a business.
Seems like it would be really tough to, and it seems like you've been super transparent about, it's not just one of those switches that you flip on and you're making $1 million a year right away.
No. Yeah, it's not. And you know, the thing about this industry and what kills me, so I want to give full disclosure here. I don't pay attention to quote unquote design Twitter, but I see things from time to time hit me and I'll go down a rabbit hole and be like, what are these people talking about? And there's so much negativity. There's all this drama because somebody shared a Stripe screenshot, and it's like, look, whether it's real or not real, doesn't matter, right? Don't let that bother you. But where are there nuggets of wisdom or lessons in here that you can apply to what you're doing? And, you know, Brett is actually a sweetheart of a guy. He knows it works for him with like sharing revenue without much context. I get it. But I think his platform is big enough now that it's almost like, dude, if you just shared a little bit more, if you just actually shared a little bit more behind the mechanics, like, I think people would get a better grasp of this.
Do you mean like the realities of what's actually going on, or a better grasp as in like how to do it themselves successfully?
Both. Cause you know, I think what Brett's done is really special. I also think he's like N of one in this category. Like there's not going to be another person of that size. There's just not room for it. But yet the market as a whole has a ton of room, right? Like think about how many agencies have existed over the past 30 years. Mm-hmm. Like I don't even remember the total addressable market for agencies and consulting. I think it's like $800 billion or something.
Right.
Like it's, Accenture. It's
there's a reason 600,000
employees.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So there's a lot of room for business. There's a lot of room for everybody to make money. There's a lot of room for people to like share what they're doing, share their lessons, build in public, and it not be this like super competitive, like, you know, zero sum game.
Agencies win and lose in the spreadsheets and in the operations and managing churn and turnover. And there are so many factors that seem like would be handicapped if you don't engage in any type of business development or onboarding or project management or expectation setting.
Totally agree.
At scale, I just imagine that every project starts to look a bit different, even though you're trying to make your projects fit into a specialized paradigm. You know, not to say that it's got to be exactly the same cookie cutter, but you know, from the agency side, no client is the same and their expectations are constantly shifting and their goals and their budgets and things like that are also constantly shifting. So how do you account for that when you try and scale these things up beyond one person?
Well, the first is that I don't think we actually run any productized businesses. So there's the first one.
Okay.
And by productized service, the way I would define that is it is a fixed price for a fixed outcome, right?
Okay.
And so if I go, we'll keep using Brett. He's an easy example. If I go to Design Joy, I pay X amount of dollars a month. I get access to a Trello board and I make requests. And the promise is unlimited revisions or whatever. I make all the requests I need. So there is a synchronous relationship to where I create a request in Trello, and our relationship lives in that board through those requests. None of our businesses work that way. What we instead opt for is just how do we simplify all the layers of bullshit that stack up. You know, at Everest, we would do these super long sales cycles, and we had a, you know, we had a chief revenue officer that made $500,000 a year and still took commission on top and went and did these huge enterprise sales cycles, and they're 9 months long, and there's tons of meetings and decks and pitches, and account managers get involved, and you're negotiating with procurement officers about like the percentages of margin that they want you to have on a role and how long the term is. I could go on and on and on. If you're a publicly traded like agency holding company and you're a CEO reporting in into the holding co, they want you to hit a 20% net margin, right? If you hit a 20% net margin, you're on track. And that blows my mind, because it's saying like 20 cents of every dollar is profit. Well, what happened to the other 80 cents, right? It went to a lot of needless layers of fat. And so what we wanted to do is just take an antithetical approach to that and say,
there you go.
How do we make more money? Period. Right.
Yeah.
And so off menu, for example, off menu is $15,000 a month. And we tell every customer that you should expect to work with us for 2 to 3 months. So we know that our LTV for a customer should be $45,000. And it's actually, it's higher. It's closer to 70. But when we're closing a deal, we know that that should be worth about $70,000 for us. Right. And then we're kind of forecasting ahead, and we're saying, how much time and attention is this customer going to get? Well, the first is that they work really carefully with a partner in the business to run their account. They're not making requests in Trello, right? They don't even ever see a to-do list. They don't have access to that. The team runs that in Linear. All they do is they talk to, in this case, likely Christian from our team. And he's like, hey, what are your goals? What are your needs, right? And the design team asynchronously works through that request, shares very thoughtful updates via Loom every typically 2 to 3 days, because we want to be in close collaboration. There's never a deck. There's never a pitch or a big reveal. Our sales cycle is one phone call and maybe a few meetings here and there. And we've built that business around social proof. And then the rest of our businesses, they all have monthly minimum commitments, right? Like, we don't actually offer any like monthly cancel anytime, anything. Like, everything has a cancellation policy, commitments. We've just greatly simplified the question of what's the value I receive for the you know, price that I'm going to pay. We've just tried to make that as minimal as possible.
A lot of creators are not necessarily business folks, like you mentioned earlier. When you are a visionary, or when you have a specialty like design or video production, you really understand how that specialty works, but not often are you willing to go into P&L and spreadsheets. And what is unique, I think, is that you've come in with the perspective of a designer and of a creative, and realized like there's a ton of market potential in doing this differently and creating a different type of agency. So part of that, I think, is that it's process-based, but part of it is also kind of the way you market these services. You've built a specialized team and a specialized offering, not necessarily productized, but specialized. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. I mean, if we think about what specialized means, it's specific, right? And that's what it is. Like, everything has a specific goal we're trying to achieve for our partners. And we take all of the other kind of areas of fluff out of it and just focus on what's the output, what's the value. And we don't add any other, you know, layers of fat in that mixture.
What has the client reception been like?
Dude, our clients love us.
Is that right?
You know, yeah.
What do they tell you about the experience? You know, you talked about some of that social proof. Like, how have their eyes been opened?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you an anecdotal story. One of off-menu's customers, multiple of off-menu's customers are agencies. We're actually helping them like rebrand or do a new site or help tell their story, because they're just too busy, or maybe that's not their skill set, whatever it is. Yeah, and so I've talked to some of these CEOs of other agencies that are bigger, like 10, 15 million a year kind of agencies. And they're like, it fascinates them on how our process works, because it's so simplified that literally the CEO can spend 5 minutes to watch a Loom video from our designer and then just really quickly record one. And in 10 minutes, the whole process of like update to feedback given is complete. Mm-hmm. He has full context. He understands what's going on and he knows exactly the next steps that are about to happen once his feedback is delivered. And so there is this transfer of information at that level that happens so quickly. It's not going from like email, let's set up a meeting, then who's going to attend the meeting, and then they're going to take notes and then maybe pass that to, right, you know, somebody else in the organization, and the information gets diluted, and it takes days to go from, well, we're going to have a 30-minute call, to now like 5 days later, we've actually made a decision about what feedback needs to be given. And you've wasted all that time and money. Just eliminate the waste. And that's something that I think a lot of our customers, ProfMenu especially, appreciate, is there's no waste.
It's interesting to think about, you know, marketing a freelancer with the insurance of a structure and an agency and a system that will make sure that, you know, no matter who you pull, the deadlines are going to be hit and the quality is going to be there. And do you commit individual teams or individual designers to each client, or do folks split time, or do they float? Like, how does that work?
It really depends. So the answer is both. You know, OffMenu starts at $15,000 a month. That's for basically one designer at a time. And then there's a version that's $25,000 a month that includes two designers. That's really more product focused. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's very likely that you might come in and say, I need brand, and Jordan, you know, our principal brand designer leads that effort first. And then it becomes web, and maybe like Evan or Patrick or Petter are involved in that process. But all through the while, you know, multiple team members are weighing in, helping out, giving creative direction. Like, it still operates internally like a traditional design team would. We're just not moving as slowly through the process. We're trying to keep a certain pace of output. So yeah, it really varies.
Well, speed matters too.
It does.
Here's what I'm super excited about. So this tweet from March 22nd, so just last week, just when you thought we were slowing down, April is going to be insane. There's going to be the public launch of Landed, rolling out the future of OffMenu, announcing the new Hey Friends, sharing Orchestra with the world. So Hey Friends YouTube channel goes live. And then, is this your setup too? Do you have a YouTube channel that's going live as well?
I do. This is pretty close to my setup. It's missing a few things right now, but yeah, this is basically my setup.
You've been working on it for a while. You got it all dialed in. Like, did you get your camera? You got all your lights? You got it all set up?
Dude, I got it all, man. Yeah. Who's been
providing the advice? Who have you been reaching out to help you get set up?
Nobody. I did it all myself.
Did you geek out on it a little bit?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, I spent way too much money, but I've always been like a photography nerd. Like, you know, there's a, you know, Sony there, there's a Leica there. Like, I've always been like super into that. Just very private with it. Mm-hmm. So I didn't need a lot of advice setting it up. Just had to take the time to do it.
Well, let's start on the YouTube channel. How are you taking that on with everything else that's happening? Like, why would you prioritize the time there, and what are you going to cover?
Yeah, you know, that's such a good question. I'll tell you, we've seen this incredible thing happen, because I'm not like an influencer. I don't think of myself as a content creator. I'm just like a bumbling idiot talking about the things that I'm learning or trying to do.
Sure.
And you know, we have these distribution partners that help us get a lot of leads, that help drive customers, all these things. But we've seen something really interesting happen, to where a lot of like leads that have come in, whether it's for OffMenu or for Hey Friends or whatever, all get reports from our sales team all the time. They're like, oh, this person like follows you or saw you on a podcast or whatever.
Yeah.
We have a lot of customers that come in with this idea already associated of like, I trust you, I like you, I want to work with you guys, because they've seen me go and talk about our businesses. And I find that fascinating. And so I said, okay, what if I just don't really say anything during Q1, because we're heads down and cranking on a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And what we saw is a drop in our sales conversion number by like 8% or something like that. We saw a drop of people mentioning me, whatever it is. And I'm kind of like, wow, like, I feel like there's a through line here, which is that my ability to go and just share what we're doing, how we're thinking about it, how the businesses are evolving. I think people like coming along on that journey, at least hopefully so. And so that's part of it. And I also just get a lot of joy in just saying, like, here's what's on my mind. Like, here's what we're working on. Here's the problem I'm trying to solve. And if that's helpful for somebody, great.
We have guests and folks on, or you just talking direct to camera?
There's a bunch of good stuff that we've got lined up, sharing kind of the lessons that we've learned building this and making sure that, you know, things are applicable for people to take and run with. So one of the pieces of content we're working on right now is still, like, you know, something I get asked all the time is, you know, how would you apply the lessons that Assembly's learned building these businesses to, like, an individual, right? Mm-hmm. So doing a really special piece of content there, basically on, like, you know, how to build a great productized business that has, like, all the important tactics and meat, and, you know, just giving that away for free on YouTube. So stuff like that is really exciting. Hey Friends, that channel is going to be, I'm so excited about it because our strategy team is really great. I love, like, nerdy, like, deep dives into a topic. I love that shit. Like, I'll go and watch, like, mechanical keyboard videos, you know, like, it's cathartic.
Have you seen the guy that picks the locks? Have you found that guy yet?
I have. Yeah. What's his name?
I don't know. He's, like, in my feed all the time because every time I see one of those videos, I watch him for like 3 hours. Like, they're 10, 15 minutes long and I will watch 20 of them
it's
in a
so
row.
So good.
Oh my gosh. I love that stuff. Carpentry and woodwork. And,
yeah. 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 So Hey Friends is doing a lot of really interesting content that's deep dives with YouTubers mm-hmm. on, like, the inner workings of how they're succeeding on YouTube. So, like, how are you approaching, like, concepts, titles, thumbnails, A/B testing? Like, it's really, really useful information. And luckily with our network, we're able to talk with a lot of really interesting creators about, you know, the inner workings of their channel. And then there's really great content on, like, how certain channels, you know, rose and how they found success. I'm really excited for what that team's doing.
I think I'd be super interested in that too. YouTube to me is like, it's like the ocean, you know, like we're trying to go to outer space. We've explored all this other, but, like, YouTube is that territory that's right in front of us that nobody has really, like, explored fully and mastered and like completely figured out. And you have, of course, you have your Mr. Beast and your Casey Neistat. You have all these, like, figureheads that have figured it out, but there are millions of creators on the platform, right? And getting traction and figuring out the science behind it, there's so much that goes into it mm-hmm. that I would be really excited to learn more about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too, man. I'm excited. I'm excited for that one to roll out.
Well, let's catch up on the other one. So the future of Off Menu, you got to play that a little close to the chest. Can you forecast anything that's happening?
Well, I don't have to play it close to the chest. You know, there's no, like, secret science to what we're doing. Like, you know, it's some cool new case studies, a new website, some changes in our pricing and how we service customers and talk about it.
The website's already coming, badass. Right? Y'all, how are y'all going to make that better?
I don't know how, but the team just does. The team is pretty incredible.
Now that is one question I've got to ask you, because all of these companies have, like, I think they've got to be really high converting, because you look at the flow and, like, they're built in a way that, you know, I know that there's a lot of intention behind them, but the quality of UX and kind of nothing, it all kind of breaks a mold. Nothing looks very formulaic, even though I can tell that it's trying to convert. So, I mean, these are all internal built. This is your team that's building these mm-hmm. and from concept to execution.
Yeah.
They're mm-hmm. so good.
Thank you.
So good.
Yeah.
I feel like they get ripped off a good bit.
Oh, they do. They do indeed.
Every time you guys come out with a new site, it turns out that a lot of folks come out with new sites right in the next couple of weeks, right?
Yeah. You know, we ignore it. I think designers have this natural tendency to get really pissy about that.
They do.
And I'm just I'm like, guys, like, it's a compliment. And they fucked it up. Like, it doesn't look anywhere near as good. So don't worry about it. And of course, you know, we'll see in our analytics for different sites, we'll see to where somebody has just, like, ripped the HTML and didn't take out the analytics tag and then is using it. And so we see those things, like, we're watching. Like,
oh man, look at that. He's on it.
But it's prevalent, man. It really is quite prevalent. Or even, I think the thing that bums me out is when good designers will obviously take something from our team and not give credit for the inspiration. And there's a difference between like, this is lightly inspired and this is like a wholesale ripoff. And I've seen a lot of wholesale ripoffs, you know, and I'm always like, guys, just take the high road. Like, don't worry about it. But it is annoying. Like there's literally like, there is another agency called Off Menu.
No shit. Really?
There. Yes. Yes. There is another agency called Off Menu. And I'm like, they launched, you know, a few months after Off Menu went public. And I was like, guys, like there's no way this is coincidental that you named an agency Off Menu. Like
all black and white.
Yeah, our process though, it's really fun for us because we stay super busy with customers, and I want to make sure I cover this carefully. Christian and Petter are partners in Off Menu. I've worked with each of them for years. Petter is one of my best friends in the world. Christian's a very close friend. You know, I'll be a groomsman in Petter's wedding in August. Like, wow. These are very deep relationships that we have, and we just trust each other implicitly. So I don't have anything to do with Off Menu day to day, really. Like, I help set the tone of like, what's our vision and where do I think the brand or the business model needs to adapt. But that team does it all. And, you know, I shared a teaser of a showreel today that's getting ready to come out probably next week or something. And it's the first time I've seen all that work. I'm like, you guys are nuts. Like, this work is incredible. So the time that I get to collaborate with the team is on our own stuff. And we don't have any copywriters internally that do that for us. I do it. All the copy, the story, the positioning for all of our brands. You know, a mixture of team members typically will lead on the brand. I think I just want to make sure I give credit where credit's due here. Off Menu's new logo was Jordan. Jordan did the bite-sized branding, the landed branding, the Hey Friends branding. Basically, Jordan did the branding for all of them, I think. And then Petter will come and single-handedly do the whole site and the whole build himself.
So you give him a content doc and some direction on what it needs to do, and then he just goes nuts.
Yep. Yep. And then a lot of collaboration.
Well, Jordan and Petter, like, props to y'all. Unbelievable.
Yeah, they crush it.
Just great stuff.
Yeah. And our other team members are amazing too. But, you know, Landed is the first one. It's the first brand that we've rolled out since we've had the expanded team. Yeah.
Okay. And Landed is, I think you alluded earlier and it might even be in this post, but it helps companies connect with creatives. Is that right?
You know, we have this incredible team, that's all around the globe. We've got a ton of, you know, team members in the Philippines, Latin America, like Europe, like Nigeria, everywhere. And I love these people. I love working with them. I've had this consistent belief my entire career that, you know, talent is globally distributed, but opportunity is not, right? Yep. And I think for too long, we've said things like offshore and, you know, thought about, well, how little could I pay somebody in the Philippines, for example, and overwork them. And you've got people on Twitter bragging about how they pay somebody in the Philippines like $5 an hour and they work 50, 60 hours a week. And I'm like, fuck that. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. And so what we wanted to do was find a way that we could provide really meaningful opportunities to global talent. And that started with just the work that we were doing with our own team. You know, for Assembly internally, we'd built this massive recruiting team, vetting, training, you know, what's our communication standards, how we approach creative work, you know, what our quality bar is, all these things. And it's led us to working with these incredible people that we pay super well, we give them great benefits, great time off, all these opportunities to kind of grow in their career. So we wanted to take that to market. We wanted to say, like, look, let's give any company in the US the ability to work with these amazing creatives, but they have to treat them like a full-time team member with respect. You know, we're going to make sure that we're handling the back office stuff, making sure that they're paid super well, that they have great benefits, they're continuing to improve and learn. Okay. So it's really a managed service for embedded talent. And the way that we're approaching it, I think, is honestly just more thoughtful, more generous than anybody else in the space. We're not trying to play the game of like, we'll recruit you some like overseas team member and you just pay them as little as possible. Yeah. So I love this company. I love the mission. I'm really, really excited about this one.
That brings us to Orchestra. You got a minute to tell me about that?
Yeah, I do. Orchestra is kind of the fun one that's hidden in plain sight. So we haven't announced it publicly yet. And we'll make a big deal of it when we do, but we have always been interested in how an agency works, right? And one of the things that we saw, especially with the kind of the emergence of these productized services and the, you know, customer making a request and a Kanban board, like that's interesting, right? But there's a whole other side of it, which is also just like, how does a team collaborate, right? And I think that for most agencies, you know, I don't know how you guys do things, Brian, but for most agencies, it's good when the customer is involved in that process and they have transparency over how a task is moving or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But also, you don't want that customer to know all the internal workings that are going on behind the scenes. And so you're like having to, you know, mirror that task in an internal system and it becomes a mess and all this stuff.
Sure.
And then there's the whole side of the business, you know, like how are you managing your customers? How are you looking at revenue? How are you understanding like how the business is performing? And I saw, you know, I saw this guy out there that was just like by himself cranking away on product. You've probably come across him, Anthony Riera, building Brew. And I saw that and I was like, he's doing something really interesting. So Anthony and I found a way to create a pretty meaningful partnership and for Assembly to you know, help out and make an investment. So Brew will be rebranded to Orchestra. There's a ton of new stuff that's coming out. It's going to be a whole different, like new and improved thing that I'm super, super excited about. So I love, it's going to be really special.
There seems like there's a lot of this community angle to it. It's like, you're thinking about bigger things than just bottom line. Like you're thinking about impact and recruitment and providing opportunity to other folks. And I really admire that, man. That's awesome.
I appreciate that, dude.
That's great to hear.
We're just trying to do shit that excites us and makes us feel good. And yeah, I mean, transparently also makes us, you know, a lot of money. Like we're not doing this for free at the end of the day. But there's ways to make sure that everybody wins. And that's what we're interested in.
If you do it right, I think that's well deserved. Last question, and I've just got to ask. So you've got all this stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like I mean, you mentioned, like you took a bit of a break before you started and you mm-hmm. needed some downtime to kind of like mm-hmm. get everything clear and figure out the right pathway forward. In the middle of all this, as it's all mm-hmm. like as we're coming to a head in April and all this new stuff is rolling out, where are you finding the time to recharge and reset? I mean, like you don't seem like you're about to pass out. You don't seem over caffeinated. You don't seem super stressed out. Like, how are you managing all these things at once and still maintaining some clarity and some confidence and all those other things that people lack as they dive deep into all these, you know, all the chaos and the problems?
Yeah. You know, that's something that, I love that you asked that. And I want to talk a lot about that on the YouTube side of things. But yeah, I mean, it's something that I struggle with. You know, I think Naval has a quote, like work like a lion, not a cow, yep. right? And I always use that as an excuse to say like, I work like a lion. So I'll go fucking hardcore for 6 months. And then for 3 months, I'm useless. And I just did that. Like I literally just did that. I went hardcore from June to December last year, and then January, February of this year, I was useless. I was probably 10% as productive as I needed to be. And so I still struggle with that. I struggle with like, how do I keep at a healthy pace? Sometimes for sure I need to give more, but how do I fall back to a baseline that isn't like all the way down here? It's more so kind of in the middle. And so
you're saying reach a stasis rather than just embrace it. You're saying like, you know, that it works in 6 month sprints and then some time off. You're saying I'd rather just 9 consistent months. You don't think that the 6 and the 3 is working for you?
I don't think the 6 and the 3 is working. No. I'm saying understanding that it's okay some days to not feel like I was an absolute monster, right? Like it's okay some days to say like, you know what? Like, I know that my focus time is from, you know, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. And as long as I sat down then and feel like I moved the needle on something, that was a good day. So for me, I think it's just like, how am I relentlessly consistent in my approach to just sitting down and doing one thing every day, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be, 30 things. I don't need to feel like I'm outworking the world. Like, it's just unrealistic.
Hunter Hammonds, follow the man. Tell them where they can follow you and kind of keep up with all these things you've got going on.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's underscore Hunter Hammonds on Twitter. And then I have no idea what my YouTube URL is, so we'll figure that out at some point, but that's it, man.
When that launches, let me know. I'd love to post it up. I can't wait to watch one. Dude, what a pleasure to talk to you for the last hour. We could go a long time, but I want you to get back to all these other things that you've got to master in and get out the door. So appreciate it. Thanks for stopping by, and I'll talk to you next time.
Hell yeah, man. Thank you.
Man, I cannot wait to see everything roll out from Hunter and his team over the course of the next few weeks. If you're not already a subscriber, be sure to hit that like button wherever you're listening. And don't miss a great conversation next week about fitness, nutrition, and productivity with fitness pro and influencer Christiana Purvis. As always, thanks for listening. I'm Brian Athey, and I'll see you next time.